The Doug Flutie Jr. Foundation for Autism is proud to be the presenting sponsor of the Boston Marathon's Adaptive Program for Runners, creating opportunities for runners with autism and other disabilities to participate in the legendary Boston Marathon.
Hi, my name is Eric Fishman, and I'm running as a member of the Adaptive Program for Runners in this year's Boston Marathon. Thanks to the Flutie Foundation, runners like me can achieve their dreams and finish the greatest race in the world.
Woo! The Flutie Foundation promotes inclusion for all to help everyone achieve their running dreams in Boston and beyond. Visit FlutieFoundation.org to get involved.
This. Yay! Have you seen his Instagram?
They need this Felger and Mass.
They don't use crack enough.
On 98.5.
Yeah, not really.
The Sports Hub.
All right, here we go.
I think I'll go for a walk outside now. The summer sun's calling my name.
Hey, Paul.
I hear you now. I just can't stay inside all day.
Uh-uh.
I gotta get out, get me some of those rays.
Ooh, it's hot.
Everybody's smiling,
yeah.
Sunshine day.
Yeah,
everybody's laughing,
let's go
sunshine
for a walk.
Day. Everybody seems so happy today.
I'm never happy.
It's a sunshine day.
Not in Boston.
Hey, Paul, I hold all the cards now. Have you heard? I have the trump card. I would have struck you out back in the day there, baseball boy.
All right, Paul Perl, Patriots Football Weekly, sunshine.com in our Town Fair Tire Studios. How you doing, Pep?
I'm doing well. I have to tell Jim that the Bane... it may have been the home run.
Oh,
yeah, the
week.
People were into that. I put
people
that
really
up.
Liked that.
Yeah, it's up on the Ogre and Mass Facebook page if anyone.
Yeah, we put it on our show today too.
Oh, good.
There you go.
Yeah, so just,
epic.
It's the gift that just keeps on giving. Thanks.
All right.
Thanks for that.
I want Paul your opinion as a member of the Patriots organization.
Oh God, do I hate when you interest me like
your,
that.
Your thoughts on how they're playing, and we had got into a good debate yesterday with Bedard about the trick plays yesterday, and Bedard's point was. Is that actually a great sign that you had to resort to that against a horrible defense and not, you know, the plays in a vacuum, well executed and well designed and all of that, they helped you win a game. But the fact that you had to go to them to score points on that wretched defense, as he said, since when are they Hickory versus South Bend Central? I'll just read you his email. Said they had available to him Brady, Edelman, White, Gordon, Hogan, Dorsett, and a good offensive line. Since when are they the little sisters of the poor? Why can't that group move the ball consistently against a defense that was ranked 20th by ProFootballOutsiders.com? Does he have a point?
I'm not really sure that he does. I would disagree a little bit. First of all, I understand that they had all the guys that he said that they did have, but they were missing three starters on offense. And I think that it's a sign of good coaching and just a good organization in general to adapt to the personnel, adapt to the opponent, and figure out ways to get to the 30s like you always do. You know, I don't think it was the best offensive performance that they've had since this group has been together, since Gordon and Edelman. I don't think it was the best offensive game, but at the end of the day, they found a way to be at 31 when the game was over, and they ended up winning the game by 2 touchdowns, and a big part of that was the innovation that they used, the imagination, probably not innovation, not a good word, but the trick plays, the up-tempo to start off the game. The first drive was surgical. I thought it was good game planning and good coaching. I really didn't find any real issues with it. Did you guys find an issue? I mean, I know that was Greg's take.
I mean, I was a little surprised that they needed trick plays to do it.
I think he has
do you feel like they lose the game if they didn't use the trick plays?
Maybe.
Yeah, I don't. I think they probably would have figured out a way, but I think that they were well-executed, well-timed, especially the double pass. I thought the double pass was really well done and well placed. It was at a perfect time. I think it completely took away their spirit. Mike, you and I was just sort of teasing you before from our argument about Rodgers last week. I think 24-17, fourth quarter, that game was over. I think he had decided, nah, we're not good enough to win this game. They're just gonna keep scoring. We're not gonna be able to stop them. So I think that was game. And I think a big part of that was that drive, that double pass. That's set up to go ahead score.
Okay, but you understand
that's good coaching.
The previous, yeah, it is in a vacuum because you do whatever it takes to get to those points. You don't think there's a little concern there that they had to do it to get to those points. You see what I'm saying?
In other words, it shouldn't have been that difficult.
The Packers give up 30 points a game to everyone. They gave up 30 points a game to C.J. Beathard.
I know they're not a good defense.
And
it's not a good team.
And the Niners, right, exactly. And the Niners just played it straight up. They didn't have to do dipsy do double passaroo all over the place to, you know, to get to their 31. The Giant, the Redskins got to 31. I mean, all these, the Lions got to 30 or 29 or whatever it is.
No, I get it. The Packers are not a great defense, but I do think that the Patriots were without some pieces, and, you know, maybe they were not necessarily expecting to be without them. I don't know what the situation was with Gronk all week, Michelle all week. I don't know how much those were game time decisions or not, but I look at what Green Bay did in the game, and I know some of this is I'm clouded from you because you've sort of been telling me about the whole Packers thing for years now, and I didn't see any crossing routes. I didn't see any innovation. I didn't see any adjustment to the defense. What was the defense taking away? They were moving the safeties up, and they were dropping them at the snap, and nothing was coming over the middle. They did nothing throwing the ball to the backs. Clearly, that's not something they do a lot. Well, that might have worked against the Patriots because that generally tends to work against New England. I thought Jimmy Graham was off to a great start. They completely got away from him.
So I
think that's, you know, kind of an example. What you tell me all the time, Mike McCarthy just kind of like just does what he does.
They line him up,
go. And like I think that's brutal. The Patriots could have done that, and maybe they would have scored, maybe they wouldn't have. But they did something different, and they did score. And I don't really understand why we're criticizing that.
Yeah, the trick plays to me are just different, though. That's all. The trick plays are different. Like, you can talk about using different guys, exploiting different matchups. I just think historically, they don't use trick plays unless they're desperate. That's how I look at it.
Maybe there was a little desperation there.
Or they're screwing around. You know, they've done that plenty, too. Mortar kicks and whatnot. So the fact that they were desperate at home against a bad Packers team, maybe that's what Greg's point was.
Okay, but
I mean, that's how I look at it.
I didn't look at it that way at all. I didn't. I felt like they were probably going to win the game. I never felt like the game was really in jeopardy of being lost. Now I know that the Packers had the ball in the fourth quarter with a chance to go ahead. They probably would have gone ahead had they not fumbled. I still think the Patriots were going to win the game. I thought they were going to move the ball when they needed to. I don't know. I guess we can differ. We can have a difference of opinion on the trick plays. I think they worked. I think they were well-timed, and I wouldn't want to do that every week. I wouldn't want to have Cordarrelle Patterson running the football every week. But
wait, hold on.
In
you're
that
not
game,
buying
it
in a Gale Sayers back there?
All right. No. I think it's a good stopgap. I think he did a good job of filling in on that drive. That drive in the second quarter, you got to give him his due. He ran hard. I think it was 5 carries, 51 yards, something like silly like that. Yeah, the rest of the game wasn't overly productive, and the game against Buffalo wasn't overly productive. But in that drive, he gave them a lift.
No big deal. Like, seriously, Gale Sayers.
What happened to you? You weren't always like this.
You got it wrong, Mike. It's Bo Jackson. That's what it is. It's Bo Jackson.
Eric Dickerson back
there. No, that's right. That's right, because he runs upright.
Yeah, upright. Two of you are just miserable. You didn't always be like, I know you guys from a long time. You weren't always like this. I'm telling you.
I'll tell you what, though. I'm not just busting chops here or trying to give some hot take. I'm telling you, the trick plays thing is real. Since the Patriots typically are surgical. They just march down the field and execute and score on whoever they want. And they're not like that now.
Well, of course not. They're missing a lot of pieces.
Okay, but they had Edelman. They had Hogan. They had White. They had plenty of guys to still be surgical.
Don't you think that when you lose... I would say that my one big concern about the Patriots offense in general is I think they have one of everything. And if you lose one of those guys, I think it affects others. In this particular game, I think Gronkowski's absence affected things. I don't think that Edelman is as effective without Gronk. I don't think Gronk is as effective without Edelman.
Yeah,
I think there's a sort of a tenuous nature there. But, you know, go back to 2014. Right?
They don't have the confidence that they had in their passing game in other years, with or without Gronk.
I don't think they should.
And I don't know if that's a Gordon thing or an Edelman thing or what. It feels to me like the only guy right now that Brady throws to with any consistency is White.
Paul's agreeing with you. They shouldn't have confidence in their passing game.
I'm not saying they shouldn't have confidence in it. They shouldn't have as much as they usually do.
Why?
Because they're not as... You've been watching this. This is not effortless up and down the field every game.
So this is our common ground, Paul. This is actually
okay,
what we're
saying. In 2014, you remember when they played that divisional playoff, epic game against Baltimore, the 35-31 game.
That was a good defense, good team. Well, Baltimore's defense
was
then
good it was a good game.
Same.
It was one of those teams that we all agree
can
Baltimore come in here and play a regular game. They don't wet themselves. Was there an air of desperation that day?
Yes.
Yeah. Did the Super Bowl title mean any less because they were desperate two games earlier?
No, we're not saying that.
Like, I don't understand what we're trying to make out of this. I agree.
They shouldn't have the same confidence in their offense.
So they use some trick plays to find a way to get to 31 and win a game.
Okay, that's all we're looking at.
Right. So, I mean, leave that part out of it. Go back to the other thing. Why wouldn't you have the same amount of confidence in their offense?
I just told you.
Because they have one of everything?
Yeah, and they were missing one of them, they were missing three starters in the game, three offensive starters. And don't just blow off an offensive lineman who I think has been a big part of why they've been able to run the ball a little bit more effectively in Shaq Mason. But you're missing your lead back, you're missing your tight end, and you're missing a starting offensive lineman. And you're just like, well, it doesn't matter. No, they don't have the depth that they once had on offense. They only have really a guy who's been here for half the season, a guy coming off a torn ACL and a suspension, and who else? Philip Dorsett and Chris Hogan trying to patch it together on the other side, and a return specialist running the football. So why would you expect it to be 2007?
All right, what do you... Well, I don't know who said anything about 2007, but...
The same effortless passing game that they've always had. They should have been a little bit limited the other night, and they were.
Okay, if those guys are there, you think it's the same?
I think if everybody is healthy, they have enough offensively. But I think that's a big if. I think Gronk's injury... I don't really like the way Edelman's looked, to be honest with you, physically. He looks to me like he's dealing with something, maybe with his foot. I don't know. That is just observational. It looks like to me... There have been times during the course of the game, a couple of weeks now, that it looks like he's maybe struggling. But that's my concern, is depth. They don't have a lot of depth. And I don't know what James White's going to look like at the end of the year if he continues to do this. Because you talk about...
Did he land on the injury report today? Because he got hurt in that game, too.
Yeah. I haven't seen... do you have it yet?
It hasn't... I don't think full... When I came on...
But he did, right? Like on one of those...
He absolutely left. I actually wonder, you guys...
He limped off the field at one point.
We're making fun of Patterson. You know, you guys were... I don't even know if he was going to get significant carries in this game if White didn't have to limp off. I think that's when he came in. I don't know. Maybe that was the plan all along. I have no idea. But it was coincidental to me that when White went, I think it was like a left knee maybe, he had his left leg sort of being looked at a little bit on the sideline. That's when Patterson came in, and then Patterson was great.
I mean, what a gift to be able to bring Bo Jackson in off the sideline like that.
Absolutely insufferable.
Relentless.
No, I do not have the injury.
It's relentless. We don't stop. We don't give up. We don't quit like the Packers in the fourth quarter.
Oh, your boy Rodgers. Oof. Not even huddling up. Not even hurry. I mean, just huddling every play, snapping the ball with like 2 seconds left. That's not my fault. It's the defense, Jim. The defense can't get
No. He's a playmaker, Cordell or Patterson, yeah. Paul. I'm a take maker. Okay. I'm just letting
what
you know.
What does that make him now? 1-37 when trailing in the fourth quarter against a good team?
Your call's next.
Felger and Mez. The Sports Hub. Felger and Mez.
Wow.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
From watching this game, I'm also starting to believe that perhaps the Patriots are critical of Brady, that Brady's not where they need him to be yet. I think, I don't know how much of that is the offense and what's around him or how much that is him, but I do think he is part of the equation.
Why do you get that sense?
I don't know. It's just gone on for so long that normally in past years, they've had injuries. They've had guys come and that. And it's just, all right, we'll just drop Brady back 45 times a game. He'll get it done. He'll figure it out. I think it's equal parts, a little bit of everything.
Is Brady not seeing the field as well as
He has not seen the field to this point this year like he has in past years. To me, there's no question about that. Now, what part of that is on Brady? What part of that is on what he's working with? You know, he's feeling pressure more than I would say he did last year. I mean, he had an MVP season last year. Is it all that different, the situation? I don't know. I would have to go back and compare notes. But there's no question that he's having issues. I just don't know where the blame lies on that.
All right, Paul, how about that piece to the commentary?
I liked the very end there because Greg pulled a Perillo there. He asked a question he didn't know the answer to. Is it any different than last year? I don't know. I'd have to go home and check my notes. That's definitely something out of my playbook. I don't know if it's true, but I'm going to throw it out there. I do think it's different, though, in all seriousness. When you're looking at having a guy like Brandon Cooks and Danny Amendola, in addition to Chris Hogan, and now you just basically have Edelman, a shell of Hogan, no Cooks, no Amendola. You don't think that's different?
Oh, yeah.
You know, Josh Gordon, I think, is doing a good job of getting up to speed quickly. But can we all agree that he's probably not up to speed yet?
I'm not impressed with his speed.
No, I haven't either.
Explosiveness.
I haven't either. Now, I think a lot of people looked at that last one and said, did you see him blow everybody away on that 55-yard touchdown? The guy came up to make a tackle, missed the tackle. You know, he's a monster. I mean, the guy missed the tackle. There was no one else there. He didn't outrun everybody to the end zone.
You could have run that.
There was nobody else there. I give him a lot of credit, Gordon, because I don't think it's an easy task to come in and get up to speed with Brady midstream the way he has. But I have no illusions that he is like, you know, Edelman and Hogan in terms of the familiarity with the offense. I think this is tough. I think Brady is really fighting hard every week to figure out ways to get these guys involved and find a way for them to make enough plays for them to score points.
How's Brady looked in a vacuum?
I think he's been okay. I don't think he's been great. We do, you know, in our post-game show, we do good, bad, and the injured at the end of the game. And I would say out of the 9 games, it's like 6 times that we've been like, he's been in the middle. We haven't really put him on the good, and I don't think he's been bad, you know, with very rare, because I don't think he was very good in, say, Detroit. I think he was on the bad list that week. But I wouldn't say he's been bad in any of these games for the most part, but he hasn't been himself either. I think the stats sort of reflect that. He's been middle of the road. What is he, like 13th?
Yes,
in rating, which is not the be-all, end-all, but I think it's a decent indicator, and he hasn't been great. Seven, you know, a lot of people made a big thing, 7 incomplete passes in a row in that game. The most amazing thing to me was that's the longest of his career.
I know.
Doesn't seem like that many.
Crazy. All right.
You know, for 20 years, you never had a bad stretch.
So there you go. Those are our thoughts. What are yours? 617-779-0985. Right to your phones. Here's our buddy Billy in Rhode Island. Hi, Billy.
How you doing, Fowler?
Good, Billy.
All right. My take on the whole thing is this. They're not what they used to be, and we all know that. And I think the roster just doesn't show up good on paper or on the field. Plus, you got guys injured. I don't think he has the weapons that he had. That's obvious. Hogan, you know, he's never in too many plays. He's one-on-one, and he isn't getting a lot of catches. Edelman, I agree that he may have he's got to get back to where he was. Hightower looked like he can't even run anymore.
Okay, Billy, so now you give me both sides of the ball. Let me just stop with Hogan, because you mentioned it too. Severely diminished?
Yeah, I don't think he's done a great job of creating separation on a consistent basis. I think he's still, I want to say, maybe the Chicago game, the second half of the Chicago game. I think he had 6 catches, and that was by far and away his best game this year. He looked a little bit more like himself as that complimentary piece. But again, I think when you take somebody away, other guys get diminished. And I think in this case, when Gronk is out, you know, there's more talented players available to cover the other receivers. And Hogan is one of those. I don't think, I mean, what's he get, 25 catches? I don't think he's been great. I don't think he's been consistent. Whereas I look back 2 years ago, and he was a pretty steady third receiver for them. And it was, you know what the strange thing to me is? He hurt his shoulder last year. And at that point, he was playing pretty much similar to the way he was the year before. And he was never the same. He couldn't create separation. But it was a shoulder injury, so you wouldn't really, that shouldn't, you know, affect his ability to get open. But I don't think he's been open consistently since.
To me, with him, it's a matchup thing. If he gets a better corner, he's toast.
I agree.
Jared in Bridgewater, hi.
Yes. How are you doing, guys?
Good.
All right. So do we think that not so much desperation, but practice for later on in the season, knowing that we kind of take the East every year, knowing you got to prepare down the long run with these guys, do we think we were getting ready for the playoffs?
So you're talking about
hang up and listen.
Using those trick plays. So the fans are trying to talk themselves into the trick plays. You ran the trick plays because you needed them.
Yeah, I think they did.
Okay, so it's not to put them on film or take them away from film or to set anything up down the road. You use them because you felt you needed them. So the question is that a concern? The fact that you needed them, is it a concern? That's the topic. Unless you think it was to set it up for the playoffs, and if that's the case, we'll agree to disagree. I don't think that's it. I think, especially in the second half, where they had gone, you know, donut there on 3 straight drives, the goal line stand, then they went 3 and out, roughing the punter, then another 3 and out.
Right.
So it was really 3 straight possessions where they got nothing. I think they felt they needed them at that point. Is that a concern that they needed them against that kind of lousy opponent at home?
See, to me, it still doesn't reach the level of concerning. I totally agree with you. I don't think it was any effort to practice it for the playoffs. I think they needed them. But I don't think the offense was such a disaster that, oh, geez, we got to try something. I don't think it got to that level. I think they moved the ball at times in that game. They just weren't consistent. And I totally agree with you. Those back-to-back three and outs with the roughing the punter in between, and then they were
where Brady went 7 straight.
Absolutely a hair away from another one. I thought the one time that I thought some suspect play calling, that goal line stand, and then after the fumble, 2 runs to set up 3rd and 7, and then he has a huge completion to Dorsett for 17. And if they had a 3-and-out there and Green Bay gets the ball right back and has the ability to get out and score, now you're in trouble.
So I just want to get something straight on the trick
play. That's why I think they needed the trick play.
Okay, so in other years, when they don't unveil the trick play until the postseason, like the Baltimore game a few years back, we talk about the genius of the team that they didn't show anybody the trick play until the postseason. Now, though, they're practicing them for the playoffs.
Okay. Correct.
I just want to make sure I'm understanding the logic.
But yes, you got it. You got it.
But separate your fights, because believe me, I have the same fights on Patriots.com. Don't fight the fans as if that's what the team says. They tried the trick plays, or a version of the trick plays that they used against Baltimore, against Kansas City on the disastrous Monday night game, and it got snuffed out by the Chiefs. And they ended up not running it. Do you remember that?
The
DVDs there, the 3 Games to Glory, sort of did a good job of illustrating that, which basically is telling you that's a bunch of nonsense that we were hiding these until the playoffs when we needed them.
Yeah, I'm talking about the fans.
That's what I'm talking about. Have that separate fight on your own.
Yeah, no. So that's what it is, that when they don't show it until the playoffs, that's the genius of Bill Belichick. That's what that is. But then when they show them in the season, now during the regular season, now they're practicing them, even though that they go out of their way to show us the practice films when they win the Super Bowl. Like, they couldn't actually practice them at, practice. Like, heaven forbid that you actually do that. I just, the constant defending and twisting yourself into a knot to try to defend everything they do just irritates the loving crap out of me. I'm sorry, go.
You ever hear the Jones sheep thing? The Patriot sheep?
No.
Oh, God. You got to hear this. They're practicing the trick plays. They want to show the opponent. You've never heard this? Oh, you got to listen to that.
He is special.
Here comes Murray's update, and we're right back.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Oh, I like this.
This is Felger and Mass.
Part of me wants to do it just to feel what that feels like.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub. The Sports Hub. The Sports Hub.
Did you sense that hurt the players?
Yeah, I did, honestly. Nobody really got an explanation for it. He's a brother of ours. He was a brother of ours that year. And, I hate to see a guy who worked so hard throughout the season not get a chance to play in the biggest game of the year and really get no explanation for it. So, with that said, I don't know how, the business aspect went into that decision. I don't know how the personal aspect went into that decision between him and Bill. But, as a friend, I would have loved to see him out on left field that day.
All right, Danny Amendola, riding in a car with Mike Reese. Again, every interview now has to be set to rap music or in a car. But sorry, there you go. Danny Amendola on the Malcolm Butler decision. I think the key part of that quote, and a real damning part of that quote, is I don't know what business decision or what business aspect or what personal aspect went into that decision. Saying maybe it was business related, contract related, holding a grudge over Malcolm Butler's contract demands or personal aspect. Was there something that happened that week off the grid that made it personal for Bill to hold him out of that game? Danny Amendola also did an interview with Barstool Sports where he gave another sort of quote that alludes to this.
I have to ask you too, like, how crazy was it after the Super Bowl loss and the whole Malcolm Butler situation? I mean, what was that like for you in experiencing that? Because there were so many questions of why that even happened.
No question. And I don't know the answer to that to this day. So, I know we had 40 some odd guys dressed up for the game. I know all of them didn't play, and for whatever reason he felt, he's the coach. I can't make that decision. I can only do my job and focus on my job. But In hindsight, you know, it's like, really, what agenda are we on? So, but, you know, it's something that I'll probably never really understand.
What agenda are we on? Saying the benching of Malcolm Butler was agenda-driven by Bill Belichick, not football reasons.
Bill's agenda.
So, for all, you know, from all the commentary, I thought those two. From Amendola, who is an aggrieved party? Let's, you know, he's got an axe to grind. I think he was upset that he didn't return here and the Pats didn't want him or didn't pay him the money. So, he's a jilted ex-lover. But still, I think that that speaks to the crux of the second guess of not using Malcolm Butler. Was it for football reasons? But I feel like there is now, Murray, some growing... Well, it happened yesterday with Greg Bedard. Like, all of a sudden, Greg Bedard talking about Bill being justified in not playing Malcolm Butler in that Super Bowl. Out of nowhere. Out of nowhere. Like, the fellow was bought off with what?
Cane's Donuts.
Something like that. All of a sudden, you know, Bedard's just, and now...
They got to him.
Chris Gasper writes a column this afternoon.
This is so disappointing.
I think he broke into the donut shop, Bedard, with Golden Tate.
Bill Belichick's decision on Malcolm Butler appears prescient now. Okay, your thoughts on that. Is Bill Belichick justified in benching Malcolm because he sucks so bad in Tennessee?
I really don't understand the premise, to be honest with you. And if you're going to operate under that premise that, you know, he was justified, then you must think he had the worst year of coaching that he's ever had because he played him the previous 18 games. Over 98% of the snaps. So he starts every game except for the last one. And then he was right to not start in the last one. He was right.
See, I take
so one of them he had to have done something wrong, right?
I take it even farther, Paul. I say if he was that prescient, he would have traded him before last season. Well, because Butler wasn't good last year. Doesn't Bill usually get rid of a guy a year too early?
And there was talk of it, like that almost happened with New Orleans, right? Wasn't there something there?
Yeah, he lost some playing time, I thought, when they looked like they were ready to go with Eric Rowe as the starter in New Orleans. And then, as typically happens, Rowe got hurt. I think that's when he originally left the lineup and they had to go back with Butler. And then there was a time, I want to say, in the Carolina game a couple of weeks later where Gilmore, if you remember how bad Gilmore was at the very start of his career, they tried to get Rowe back in there for Gilmore a little bit. And again, Rowe couldn't hold up physically, so it didn't really materialize. But those are the two corners they rolled with all year, was Gilmore and Butler. And I don't know what's going on in Tennessee. Maybe Malcolm Butler is the worst corner in the league now. I don't know. I find it awfully hard to believe that anybody's playing any worse than Marcus Peters for the Rams, because I have seen some Rams games, and he gets killed every week. I don't know what's going on with him. But last year, I watched all the games. Butler wasn't, quote-unquote, that bad. Was he playing as well as he had previously? No. But he was not a disaster. And now I think everybody is sort of saying, see... This is how he was playing all year. That's why he lost his job. That's not true.
If you want to tell me Bill was prescient not to sign the guy, yes.
Oh, I mean, for $60-plus million, no problem.
They nailed the contract
No
thing.
Problem.
As usual. I absolutely. Mean,
but who has bitched about that? Well, about no them one. Not signing him?
But what does that have to do with the game?
It doesn't.
What does that have to do with a coach not doing everything he can and using all the weapons at his disposal just to see if it will work and if he can win a game? That is so freaking asinine.
It's what I was talking about with McCarthy, Mike, right? You have complained, and I would agree with you. You can't just keep doing what you do if it's not working. You need to find ways to do things differently. They did all different stuff in the Super Bowl, right? None of it was working, Mike. And then you just say, well, I'm not playing that guy because he's going to be leaving as a free agent, and he hasn't really played that well all year. While I'm getting absolutely eviscerated on defense for four full quarters, no one will ever convince me that that was the reason why he didn't play.
I have no problem with him not signing him. Bill turned out to be...
And neither does anybody else.
Right, exactly.
I mean, a lot of his, you know, revisionist historians are telling you that, oh, you know, I guess they didn't lose Lester Hayes now. No one ever thought that. No one ever thought that he should be signed. Once they signed Stephon Gilmore... That was the end of Malcolm Butler in New England. They were never going to sign two $60-plus million cornerbacks. That was never going
to
happen.
I wanted them to re-sign him 2 years ago, but once I got into last year and his play went south, fine. No problem. Don't sign him. That's not the second guess. But to turn it into that is intellectually dishonest.
Oh, it's stupid, please. And you know what? Go back to last regular season.
It was about
season.
That game and giving up 500 yards in the passing game and never bringing another player off the bench to see if you could change the matchup, which you do every other game in every other circumstance. Every other circumstance, you bring in different personnel to see if you can stop the bleeding. And this time you didn't. and now it's okay because he's had a bad year in Tennessee? That's embarrassing. Anyone who says that, that is embarrassing. Embarrassing. Seriously. You can't play Malcolm Butler. I mean, and
it's like the blind Belichick sheep just baaing. Bah.
And you know what? Reading Chris's column, I'm just leafing through his column now. So it doesn't feel like he's justifying the Super Bowl move. It's more about the contract, is what it feels.
Yeah, I have no problem with the contract because nobody thought they should re-sign him at that money. Yeah. Nobody.
Look,
but both things can be true. Bill was right to move on from Malcolm Butler this offseason.
That's what I'm saying.
And he was a fool to not put him in just for a couple of plays in the second half.
Absolutely, both things can be true. And you know what? The more I think about it, you go back to that New Orleans game in the regular season when they started to take snaps away from Butler and then had to put him back in. Bill was pissed that he turned down the contract offer because they made Butler. He was pissed. Butler wanted more. You're not that good. And then he was going to stick it to him. And it really is that simple.
And they knew he was going to be leaving, too. Yeah. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. There's no doubt in my mind that once Gilmore came, that was it for Butler. Butler was never coming back. And there's nobody in New England that had a problem with that. You look at what Gilmore is, he's a better, he's a bigger, more talented version, right? He's a cover cornerback who you don't have to have specific matchups for. You can say, well, if it's Antonio Brown, that might not be the best thing that for us. Like Butler could cover Antonio Brown and be competitive-ish. I mean, he lost, but everybody else does too. Gilmore can cover the taller guys too, and Butler couldn't. He could only cover the smaller guys. So everybody understood what was going on. I just think it's revisionist history to say that everybody killed the Patriots for not re-signing Malcolm Butler. So, nobody did.
That's so bad. 9 months so great. Chris does kind of allude to it, though. 9 months later, the most confounding and scrutinized decision of Belichick's glorious tenure as Patriots coach, the benching of Malcolm Butler, looks better and better, especially as the Patriots prepare for a reunion with the excommunicated cornerback in Nashville on Sunday. It doesn't look better. It looks exactly the same.
Yeah.
And, Chris, why don't we wait to find out? I mean, maybe you know, maybe you've heard, maybe you haven't, maybe the rumors are right or not, but what... Isn't the why he was benched important, too?
Yeah, and I still haven't figured that out, so I don't know. Maybe Chris has.
And let me tell you.
I've given that one up. I don't even think that's all that important anymore.
Well, to me, once the guy's in uniform.
Exactly.
If it's so bad that you have to deactivate him. We talked about this, too. You cut out to Tijuana, you know, the night before, like Barrett Robbins in 2000. You deactivate him. If you like Gene Robinson, who I think actually played the game, if you go for some... So, you know, a little extracurriculars during a family award dinner the night before, and you got to deactivate, you know, because his mind is elsewhere, or like Icky Woods is locked in a hotel room, you know, like, okay, deactivate him, no problem. He was in uniform.
No, he wanted him on the sideline. He wanted him to be a spectacle. He wanted to put him in the stockade and have him publicly shamed right there on the biggest football stage in the world.
So why don't we find out why he was benched, and then you tell me if that's the right decision or not, if it looks better in hindsight. There is no hindsight. It's over.
I'll tell you what, the why doesn't matter to me. It doesn't. The why doesn't matter to me. All the coach does is preach all the time, focus on winning this game. That's what he says. Focus on winning this game.
They
get on the field. Then they get on the field, and in the biggest game, he breaks his own rule.
There is a Patriots media counteroffensive at foot.
Bah!
There is.
Bedard got the Cane's donuts.
Listen, listen.
Gasper got a Saks Fifth Avenue gift card.
Probably. Excellent. Right? Seriously.
Some Gucci loafers.
Yep.
Or a scarf or something. He got
Louis
a scarf.
Louis Vuitton belt.
They did. They bought him a
he
scarf.
He got a belt of some kind.
No, or a man purse. Something like that. Gasper got one of those pocket square. Something like that. This whole idea, there's no excuse for Belichick benching Butler in the Super Bowl. There will never be an excuse. So anyone that tries to make one for him has been altered chemically or something. I have no idea. But there's no excuse for not playing Butler in that game in some capacity. And just downright no answer. It was personal for Belichick, and he stuck it to him. Plain and simple.
There is no other explanation. I mean, and again, it all starts with being in uniform. If you're in uniform... I mean, if it was so bad that he deserved to be benched, then put him in street clothes and put him in the press box they would everybody
else. I mean,
that's my
first reaction. The only thing that I'll hold out is if maybe it's something happened in the interim, you know, in that 90 minutes. You know,
sure.
You have to have him. He was already in uniform. There's nothing they could do. But then why play him on special teams?
Right.
Which he played one snap on special teams if it was that bad, I don't think he should have played at all.
Because there was only one punt in the game.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's everybody likes to say it was only one play. You know, that was, well, that's because you only made a punt once.
No, that's right, because the Eagles were going up and down the field on you. That's why.
Okay, so there's that. We'll wrap it up with Paul Perillo and your phone calls right after this on Felger and Mass.
This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Making sense of Boston sports.
There's no catching and no throwing. Anyone can play, no matter how hopelessly unathletic they are.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Well, we have access to practice. And the day we went to practice, he practiced every play. So nobody had any idea about this. I do know, you know, Devin McCourty has been quoted recently as saying everybody knew about it. I'm thinking, well, wait a minute, how did everybody know about this? If he's practicing every play. And the only thing I would say in retrospect, first of all, we don't know really what happened. I guess sooner or later, there had to be something there.
There has to be something there. Correct.
And he's, you know, we had a shot of him crying during the national anthem, so he knew at that point, I guess, that he wasn't going to play. And then the game evolves the way it does, and they're getting shredded in the secondary. So why does he not come in? And the only question I would have is, in addition to obviously trying to find out what really happened, if he's not going to play, why wasn't he deactivated? Why wouldn't you, if he's not going to play, put him over here, he's inactive, and then somebody else comes up? That's the only thing that surprised me. And I've talked to a couple of NFL coaches as well, and that surprised them as well in terms of, you know, if you're not going to play the guy, deactivate him.
Oh, so right. It was my first take after the game, and it remains the number one issue for me today. How negligent, how awful is that? How awful a coaching move is that to have a corner or a defensive back on the bench who you're not going to use as a defensive back? What? So if you think Malcolm Butler sucks that much, fine. Put him in a suit, put him on the press box, and activate another defensive back. So when you're on your way to giving up 500 yards to a backup quarterback, you can throw someone else in there and see if you catch lightning in a bottle with that player.
I agree.
So you've now taken your game day roster from 44 to 43. Or 45 to 44, whatever those numbers are.
46 to 45, but I get your point.
They keep changing it. 46 to 45. So, whatever, you've taken away roster spot. That is bozo awful coaching.
I mean, right, again, think of it in the terms of 2 years prior. How many of us would have even known that they used a roster spot on Malcolm Butler in the Seattle game?
Right.
Right? Like, again, nobody even knew who the guy was back then, for crying out loud.
So indefensible. And now that's, oh my God, there's a counter campaign.
It's propaganda.
There's a counteroffensive the week of the Titans game. Wow. Interesting.
I can't believe it. What I am as shocked by is that some fans are accepting it. Like eating it up. These people were livid after the Super Bowl. I've never heard this, the Patriots.
Because it's easier to digest, Mez. It's easier to digest this narrative than something that is so inexplicable and stupid and unjustifiable that Belichick did in that Super Bowl.
Well, and they're winning now. Right? They're winning now, so people are, you know...
Butler looks god-awful.
They've moved on, all of it. I'm stunned, like, people forget how mad they were at the time.
Again, I said, you know, before the last break that I haven't watched a ton of Butler in Tennessee, and I know that his performance has not been up to par, right? Could he be playing right now worse than what went on in the Super Bowl?
No, I mean, at least the same.
I mean, I don't think you can play any worse than, you know, I thought Gilmore was fine in the Super Bowl. I thought every other defensive back was awful. Every other one was awful. I thought Rowe couldn't start. They had to take him out. They bring in Batamosi and Jordan Richards. I thought McCourty struggled on key plays in that game.
Chung.
Who played better than Butler is playing right now in the Super Bowl other than Gilmore?
It's all the same. Give me a thought on this week, Paul. What do you think?
I think this is going to be one of those ugly games. I don't know if the Titans' defense is as good as the numbers indicate. They're number one in a lot of things across the board. And I know that almost all of their games have been sort of tight rock fight. And that's what I'm expecting on the road. The one thing that could be interesting, I don't know if you guys have talked about this much. It sounds like it's going to be a Patriots home game.
Yeah, right.
It sounds like virtually everybody is going to be heading down to Nashville for this game. I think it'll be a low-scoring game. I think the Patriots will find a way to win it. I can't imagine them losing heading into the bye. You know, they're going to be focused. You know, we had some talk today. Trap game, you know, they had a pretty good performance. They've had all these primetime games. They finally go back to Sunday at 1. Is it a trap game? And I think that that bye hanging, you know, 2 weeks from now prevents that. And they find a way, maybe 23-17. I don't think this is going to be an easy game. I don't think it's going to be a high flyer. I think the Titans, I think Vrabel's presence is fascinating. One of my favorite guys. I know I heard a little of you coming in, Mike. Totally agree. I mean, just one of my favorite guys to deal with in that locker room. I think he'll have his team ready. I just don't think they have the offense to win.
Paulie Paul, thanks for coming in.
All right.
Okay, see you next Tuesday. Wednesday. All the days mushed together, right? Wednesday for Paul Perillo. Have a good week. We have no commercials here, just an update. I have a little bit of a developing opinion on the Butler thing and what it means for this week.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz.
Looking for hope? House of Possibilities offers children and adults with disabilities a path to greater independence. From social to recreational programs to overnight respite and career and community access opportunities, House of Possibilities is changing the way people see disabilities and their program participants see themselves. Visit houseofpossibilities.org to learn more or to support their work. That's houseofpossibilities.org. House of Possibilities. See what belonging can do.
The Doug Flutie Jr. Foundation for Autism is proud to be the presenting sponsor of the Boston Marathon's Adaptive Program for Runners, creating opportunities for runners with autism and other disabilities to participate in the legendary Boston Marathon.
Hi, my name is Eric Fishman, and I'm running as a member of the Adaptive Program for Runners in this year's Boston Marathon. Thanks to the Flutie Foundation, runners like me can achieve their dreams and finish the greatest race in the world.
Woo! The Flutie Foundation promotes inclusion for all to help everyone achieve their running dreams in Boston and beyond. Visit FlutieFoundation.org to get involved.
Face it, winter can wreak havoc on your parking lot. And the last thing your customers need is to dodge potholes, which might make them dodge your business altogether. Make sure they don't have bumps on the way to your door by calling U.S. Pavement. 1-800-PAVEMENT. Let U.S. Pavement smooth the road to your door. U.S. Pavement has paved the way for successful businesses all over New England since 1985. Call now, and a member of their expert team will evaluate your site and give you a price that won't leave a hole in your budget. Call U.S. Pavement at 1-800-PAVEMENT or visit uspavement.com.